The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This is the Pro America Report on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Hey, the big news, no surprise, Joe Biden has announced that he's running for re-election, And if you watch his video announcing it, it's the same deal as the 2022 election. He's going to lie about everything and try to scare everybody into thinking that something really bad is going to happen and that he's the one who can protect our freedoms, our rights, and our opportunities. When it feels to me like he's the guy, his government has taken away our opportunities. The economy is at least shaky, if not stumbling and crumbling. And then our freedoms and our rights, are you kidding me? If you're on the wrong side of Joe Biden's administration, you got no freedom. You got no, your rights are limited. Due process denied. Free speech denied. Narrative machine, big government, big media, and big tech pressuring all around us. So we are in for it, folks. I mean, we're in for another, year and a half till the election day of lying about everything and trying to spin everything as something it's not. So we'll see. Now, I here's my thing. He looks so weak and weakened that I know they're going to try to run a what they call a Rose Garden strategy, right? They're going to try to say Joe Biden is busy. He's got it's an important job. And let me be clear. If you're president, it is crazy busy. It is crazy pressure. It would be hard to run for reelection. But here's the two things what you need to know. What you need to know comes down to these two things. Number one. It's always hard to beat an incumbent because the incumbent has all of the momentum, all of the inertia of the government on his side. And in the case of Biden, what you need to know is he's got a lot of momentum, meaning the government is huge. The government has lots of employees. The government has lots of power. The government can both make Biden look good in things that they will showcase that he did. And also it can make clear to people, if you want to prosper, you better be on the right side of the regime. And again, let me say it point blank. Both parties do it. When George W. Bush was in office in 2004 election, he used all of the momentum and the inertia and the power of the government to get reelected. So what you need to know is it's hard to beat an incumbent. And you're talking about a $1 billion operation that Biden's campaign will be. And that, on top of that, trillions of dollars in the economy that are directed by the federal government, where you can pick winners and losers just by a blink of an eye, just by kind of signaling one way or the other. Not to mention the very specific instances of the federal government having massive largesse to pass out huge amounts of money, whether it's John Podesta's Green New Deal fund out of the White House, $387 billion. Or, by the way, that's right, it's billion. It's not million. It's billion. Or the massive influence and power of the regulatory state. I mean, it's one after another. So what you need to know is it's hard to beat an incumbent. Number two, the Ed Martin rule of modern presidencies applies. And I've said over and over again, I'm not sure we'll ever see a two-term president because all of the negative of a presidency and of a time we're in comes to the fore. And so Joe Biden can't run as old Joe from Scranton. He'll be more stable than Trump. He'll be more serious than Trump. He'll be a real guy that knows how the system works. Nope. Now he's President Biden. and he's stumbled out of Afghanistan with billions of dollars in equipment left behind and lives lost. He's stumbled around the world. He's stumbled with the economy. His bureaucrats have messed things up. His FBI is a disaster. His court system, the people he's picking to run things, DOJ, are stumbling and bumbling and fumbling. Now, again, I don't think a Republican will get a second term either. I think it'll be because I think by the time the nature of the narrative machine, I'll say, no, let me pause. That's not the right one. I don't want to do that. The narrative machine's different. The nature of the modern bright lights of the presidency makes it impossible for a candidate, excuse me, for a president to do anything but be radically diminished. No matter how much good you can do and how many bows you can take, I just think the Klieg lights are bright. So I know I'm talking against myself when I say what you need to know. One is it's hard to be an incumbent. Two, it's this is going to be hard to be an incumbent. I know that those are contradictory, and I'm not sure what will happen, except I know this. Do you doubt that within, what, a week, 10 days of Election Day in 2024, do you doubt that we will know it comes down to four states, you know, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Nevada, or maybe Arizona? All the other states will have sifted and shifted right into their categories. And you'll know that Ohio's Republican and California's Democrat and New York is Democrat and Missouri is Republican and Florida is Republican. And, you know, Alabama's Republican and New Hampshire is Democrat and Massachusetts is Democrat. You get the point. So a week from the election in 2024, November, let's call it November 1st, we know it'll come down to three or four states. And then the question becomes, in my mind, which team has competed to protect the system that will yield the results that they believe are true and necessary? So if you're the left, you think the Democrats, you think, well, we need to get all those voters through early voting and ballot harvesting and all these kinds of things. Low information voters, they don't even know what they're voting on, but let's get them out there. And if you have to, in my opinion, they steal some votes here, there, and everywhere. And if you're Republicans and conservatives, you're like, you know, we got to get our best people out. We got to make sure they know what's at stake. We got to make sure they're informed. We got to make sure they pick right and see what's going on. And you got to protect the system. So who, by a week before the election, will have put in place the system that can carry the day? And I think, amazingly, as these things happen, Trump equals out with Biden on, say, the age factor. Even if it's not true, I think people will say, well, Biden's old and so is Trump. Meaning, when I say it's not true, Biden looks frail and feeble and messy. You know, seems to be having a hard time. I don't think Trump does. Now, Trump is 4 years, 5 years younger. Something like that. I think, I think Biden is 80 and Trump is 76. That's not that big a difference, right? But one seems strong and energetic and bright-eyed and everything. And the other, the current president seems weak and enfeebled. But be that as it may, that equals out. And what you need to know is old white guy is both of them. And so that equals out. If you watch the announcement by Biden, both his video announcement and then the press releases, he's going all in on the people of color and on the women. That's his party now. The hyphenated Americans, the party of women. And I think what you need to know is I think the other party, the Republican Party, is the party of America, of people that want opportunity and don't want government to decide, of people that want to figure it out and don't want to be told that they're losers and they're broken and the system's bad. But we'll see. It's going to be a battle. It's going to be a battle. But that's what you need to know. That's what you need to know. The incumbent has a huge advantage, huge advantage. I mean, Biden and this and with the media, it'll be even bigger. But it's hard to see Joe Biden and his record being anything but devastating on Election Day. So we're in for something. We're in for something amazing. All right. Hang in there. We're going to talk with Roger Stone, the great Roger Stone, in just a moment. And also we will get an update from my friend Mark Mix. All that coming up after this break. It's Ed Martin. It's the Pro America Report. Don't forget, visit ProAmericaReport.com, ProAmericaReport.com. Sign up there for the Daily Wink. We'll be right back. Ed Martin, Pro America Report. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on a Pro America Report. Great to check in with our old friend Roger Stone. Roger, I was telling a story of 6 or 8 weeks before the election. I think I've told you this before, but I'll tell it again. I was in my office in St. Louis, Missouri. Phyllis Schlafly was, she died about 3 weeks later. I get a phone call and my secretary comes in and says, hey, Roger Stone's on the line. I said, oh my gosh, let me talk to Roger. I'd seen him at the convention, but we didn't know each other for that many years, a little bit over the time. And so Roger gets on the phone. He says, hey, down the stretch, they're going to come after Trump. They're going to come after him hard, and everybody's got to be ready. Here's a couple things we're doing, and I won't let you reveal in your memoirs and other places the things you were doing. But needless to say, when he needed it, there was Roger Stone had laid the groundwork for some of the more amazing moments down the stretch, especially around the Billy Bush video hit job and all that. So Roger Stone is always seeing a little bit further down the field than everybody else. So welcome back to the program, Roger. How are you?
Ed, it's great to be with you. I got to clarify that. People will now say, oh, when Stone knew the Billy Bush thing was coming, he reached out to Julian Assange and told him to move up. Those are all lies.
Good point. That to be clear, actually, it was something that had nothing to do with Billy Bush. It just that he said they're going to cut. And Phyllis Schlafly felt the same way. They would come after Trump down the stretch in ways that we hadn't seen, and hanging on to the different groups that cared about the future of the country, including in Phyllis's case. The conservative case for Trump came out the day after she died, September 4th. She died September 5th. The book comes out in part to say to conservatives, don't be swayed by what you're going to see in the media. So, Roger, now, listen, over the last 6 years, the left has systematically removed from the playing field, from the chessboard, some of the more capable people, right? Flynn, Stone, Manafort. Manafort, I often tell the story, Manafort was the best that anybody had ever seen or thought of to run the convention, to make sure that the Cruz people and others didn't roll Trump. All these people taken off the field. Now Tucker. I mean, it's systematic, right?
It really is. My late advice to Trump was that he needed to elevate Hillary's role in the silencing of the various women who had been sexually assaulted by Bill. You can't be an advocate for women if you're terrorizing women, you're intimidating women. And it was Hillary who hired the nasty private detectives and the heavy-handed lawyers to try to silence Bill's victims. I understood that Hillary could not win without a disproportionate number of votes for women, and her real record needed to be exposed. To go to your question, I grieve not for Tucker Carlson, who's my friend of 30 plus years, because we both know he will land on his feet, and that the millions of people who believe him, who support him, who watch him every night, will follow him wherever he goes. What's more significant here is the last sane alternative narrative on cable news has essentially been removed. While there may be some good people left at Fox, they're going to be dictated to in terms of content. And therefore, I think this is a blow to freedom. It is a blow to the First Amendment. It is a blow to anyone, whether it is Big Pharma or whether it is January 6th. Or whether it is Hunter Biden's laptop, it doesn't matter what the topic is. Tucker Carlson was a courageous and is a courageous journalist who was not afraid to reveal the truth. Now, on the one hand, cable is dying as a medium. Cable will go the way of network television ultimately. But in the short term, Ed, there are many 55, maybe 60 plus voters out there, they're not on the internet. They're not all that net savvy. They're used to turning on the television and watching Fox. And now we've been denied a vibrant voice on that platform. I think the country is going to be much poorer for it.
Another quick story, and I want to do that because I want to tell you the why to our listeners. I was offered a job with CNN. I was a contributor. They said, well, we want you to be a contributor. And I called up Roger Stone. I said, I'm going to call like four or five people that I trust to say, what do I do? And I said, what do you think? And I was nervous. And I remember, you may not remember, Roger, you said, oh, no, take that job. take that job no matter what, and just plan on when you get fired. You know, in other words, they're going to fire you eventually. Just like they did to Tucker. Eventually, they're going to push you out. And, you know, Roger, same thing with you. You lived your life and your career. But I mean, what they've done, and that's why I want to say stonedefensefund.com, Roger and his family still digging out from these lawsuits. They come one after another. Every time there's a lawsuit, I think there was one on January 6th, everybody else is sued. Then they add Roger Stone. He has to get a lawyer up in D.C. and try to push these things, get it dismissed. So if you go to stonedefensefund.com, and also, of course, I want to make sure people know the Stone Zone with Roger Stone every day at 5 p.m. Eastern time on Rumble, his show live there. You can check out lots of great guests. So, Roger, what? But now that if Tucker's out of the way and Fox is sort of, even if there's guys there that care, ladies there that care of the vision of sort of America First, they're going to pull their punches because they don't want to lose their job. So what is the future then? I mean, how are we setting up for, if in 2020 we had 51 intelligence community people lie to try to slow down the Trump juggernaut. We had Zuckerberg spending $400 million to try to cover up, to get ballot harvesting and all. Now we've got $380 billion in the White House from Podesta, and we've got Tucker off the air, and everybody's whole all pulling punches. What? Where does this end up?
Well, Adam, first of all, I appreciate your mentioning my legal defense fund, because Hunter Biden's high-priced lawyers are threatening to sue me again, simply because I have discussed information that's in the public domain. I mean, everything I know about Hunter Biden's laptop, I read in the New York Post.
Right.
And I had no role in that information becoming public, but it's public information at this point. So it's an intimidation game. I've received two formal letters from Hunter Biden's lawyers telling me that I needed to apologize and shut up. I'm not going to do either. So, yes, people can go to stonedefensefund.com because I'm going to end up in a legal fight with them. To answer your question, I think that what they are planning is a complete replay of what we saw in 2020. The same exact forces, Mark Zuckerberg particularly, federal dollars involved. I don't think we can count on there being a free, fair, honest, transparent election in every state. I honestly think at this point, given the state of the economy, gasoline prices, inflation, food shortages, the disastrous foreign policy of Joe Biden, slow walking us to the brink of World War III, an open border, which is bringing crime and pestilence and drugs into America. If we had an honest election, I think Donald Trump would win it. I just am not yet confident that that will happen. And now we have one fewer voice to criticize all of that. Tucker Carlson is no longer there to tell us the truth about anything, whether it's Big Pharma, whether it's January 6th, whether it's the upcoming elections.
We're talking with Roger Stone again. Roger Stone, you at 5 o'clock each day, the Stone Zone, 5 p.m. East Coast time. You get on Rumble, StoneZone.live, and it kicks right to it. Also, again, to say it, it's StoneDefenseFund.com, StoneDefenseFund.com. There's nobody that's been targeted as much as Roger. It's he's an add-on to everybody's lawsuits and all. And I had even forgotten as we started the Hunter Biden one. Okay, Roger, you've been vocal for a long time on Donald Trump's talent. Before a lot of people saw it, you said this guy could run and win. I mean, this is a decade or longer ago, more than that. Now you got DeSantis out there. You've got Pompeo, I guess, quit. Nikki Haley. What's the state of play? Is any of you, again, you've watched top level big league presidential politics for 50 years. What's the reality of the primary right now?
This is Donald Trump's nomination to lose. Trump is the one. I think that he will be even a stronger and better candidate and a better president than he was in his first term. And he did great things in his first term, despite the efforts of the two-party duopoly to slow down or to water down or impede his America First agenda. I think he's the only one with the courage, the showmanship, the leadership skills, the cojones, if you will, to lead an American revival. Ron DeSantis, who's my governor, I live in Florida, is not who he tells you he is. And if you believe that his position on COVID-19, for example, is different than Donald Trump's, then you're really not looking at the record, because he makes a number of specious claims about mask mandates, about the culture wars. But when you read the small print regarding Ron DeSantis, it doesn't match up with the rhetoric. So, I think this is playing out in the polls even as we speak. Donald Trump pulling out now to a massive lead. Trump's support has intensity. DeSantis is not as well known around the country. But Trump's allies, I think, are very effectively defining him for people. So it is Trump's nomination to lose. I don't think he will lose it. I think he's in a commanding position. We need to start thinking about how we're going to beat the Democrats. Despite Joe Biden's announcement today, yeah. I still don't think in the end that he will be the Democratic candidate. He can start a campaign committee today. He can file for office today. But until he files to get on the ballot in South Carolina, which doesn't happen until January, none of it's real. And in the meantime, he freezes the field. I mean, while I watch them systematically censor and cancel Robert Kennedy, this is really disturbing. He has an important message. He's challenging the globalists. He's challenging the war machine. He's challenging the governmental corporate cabal. That is destroying our middle class, that has left the people behind. He's an articulate critic of Big Pharma. They just don't want to let him speak. They're not going to let him on the debate stage. They're not going to let him on the ballot. They're going to do the full Bernie Sanders on him. And I think it is really pathetic. In the end, I don't think he wins the nomination, but they're not even going to give him a fair chance to compete for it. And that's just unfair and un-American.
We're talking Roger Stone again. StoneZone.live is his 5 p.m. East Coast TV show every day, and StoneDefenseFund.com. Last question, Roger. After Watergate, after Ford's failures, we got Carter. The economy's in shambles. We've got hostages in Iran, and it was pretty dark, right? I mean, interest rates are way through the roof, and all, gas prices, there's lines for gas, and yet morning in America was around the corner. Right now, it feels pretty dark, right? It feels pretty dark. It feels like the forces of left and strange and evil are on the move, whether it's transgender or the media. But you know, it can turn, right? I mean, give me your sense of how, hey, you know, this is America, and we've got the tools and the pieces. We've just got to go do it.
Well, people find this response surprising for me, but I think we're at a time where prayer is extraordinarily important. Had I not been redeemed in the blood of the cross, I don't think I'd be alive today. I was targeted for destruction by the deep state. No, I did not lie to Congress. No statement I made to Congress hid any underlying crime. There was no Russian collusion. There was no WikiLeaks collaboration. There was nothing to cover up for when it came to Donald Trump. I was charged because they wanted to pressure me to testify against Donald Trump falsely. When I wouldn't do that, they decided to destroy me. Mm. But for the power of Jesus Christ, it would not be with you today. So the most important thing people can do is pray. God will not let America, the America we love, be destroyed. We've read the Bible. We know the forces of good prevail over the forces of evil. In every great battle in the Bible, the forces of good, the forces of the Lord are overwhelmingly outnumbered. And they are always victorious. So that may not sound like a political strategy, but we're not in a political battle. We're in a spiritual battle. And therefore, prayer right now, by all Americans, is the single most important thing you can do.
All right. Well, thank you. Hey, StoneZone.live. Tune in every day, 5 p.m. East Coast, Roger Stone Show. He gets all the big guests and good guests. And also, take a moment, go over to StoneDefenseFund.com. I can assure you, I've spent a bunch of time with Roger and his folks. Roger, I made a mistake. I meant to ask you at the beginning, how is your wife? A lot of us followed your wife, battling cancer and things. How is she doing?
She's doing extraordinarily well. She's now almost 2 years, just short of 2 years, cancer-free.
Great.
The IRS and the DOJ continue to harass us in a lawsuit over our 2006 taxes. And because she is our principal family bookkeeper, she's under enormous stress in that process. But the matter will get settled. No, I did not underreport income. No, I did not hide assets. I simply don't have the money to pay them. They're suing me because I simply don't have the money to pay them. So, but she's doing extraordinarily well.
Good.
And Ed, thank you for asking.
Good, 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 good. All right. Roger Stone, everybody. Thank you, Roger. As always, thanks for the fight and also for the inspirational message to Roger Stone. I'll put up on social media all the links to his site as well as his defense fund. We'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report, and time to catch up with my old friend Mark Mix. And Mark Mix has been a busy man. There's a lot happening right now. I got a text from one of his colleagues alerting me that there was a story to talk about. Of course, Mark Mix is the president of the National Right to Work Committee, almost 3 million members in that public policy organization. He's also the president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation, keeps him busy. And Joe Biden, among the many things people don't realize, I think, in this last couple of years, Joe Biden's presidency has been radically pro big labor. I mean, he has said before to people bragging that, hey, there's a teachers union member in the White House, meaning his wife. But in lots of ways, he is really Joe Biden's administration has been and he brags about it, the most pro big labor government we've had in a long, long time. So, Mark, welcome back. First of all, what about the news that Joe Biden's running for re-election? How'd you feel about that?
Well, obviously, union officials here in Washington, I guess, are jubilant about that because there's more that he has to do, apparently. But Ed, thanks for, first of all, having me on and talking about these important issues. And you got it exactly right. When you talked about Biden's pledge to be the most pro-union president, it wasn't being pro-worker. It wasn't him being pro-union worker. It was being pro-big labor. You got it right. You framed it right. And that's exactly what's happened over the last couple of years with his administration. And the story just gets more difficult each day. That's for sure.
You know, Mark, we're talking again, Mark Mix, and I'll put up on social media links to his work. NRTW.org is one of the websites with that's the Legal Defense Fund there. But Mark, the newest piece of this is the next Secretary of Labor. So Julie Hsu, S-U is her last name, comes out of California. That's probably all you need to know. But more specifically, we'll get into it. But before we get to that, the first Secretary of Labor was the Boston mayor, right? And was it Walsh, Mayor Marty Walsh? Is that his name? I'm getting it wrong. Or some Irish name.
Yep. No, you're exactly right. Marty Walsh was his name.
And he came out of the labor movement. Was he pushed out? Did he go for a better job? I know he went to a big job, but did he go for a better job to get out, or was he pushed out? Was he not actually radical enough?
Well, I think that there may be something to that. And, you know, he was a building trades guy up in Boston. He was the Boston mayor. He basically made Boston a union town. Not that he had to work too hard at that. But the bottom line was it was a pretty good perch, and he'd been a longtime friend of Biden's. He came down to Washington. What I think, Ed, and I think your hypothesis is correct, he didn't push fast enough and far enough for the likes of organized labor and the big labor bosses here in D.C. So they had to step up their game. And, you know, the Democrats were pushing Biden to have an Asian American on the cabinet. It wasn't quite filled out from a diversification standpoint or diversity standpoint. So, you know, it's now your ethnicity that's your qualification, not your ability to do the job. And certainly with Julie Hsu, there are some real questions about whether or not she can actually do the job.
Again, our guest is Mark Mix, who heads up the National Right to Work Legal Defense Fund, and also is, of course, the president of the National Right to Work Committee, almost 3 million members over there. That's what I was going to say. I think, when I was in St. Louis and did a lot of work, I was Board of Elections chairman and all, you did have this difference between this sort of radical big labor that wanted to expand. I think that's where this Secretary Hsu comes out of. And then guys like Marty Walsh, who, although radically big labor, they wanted to build stuff. They actually wanted jobs. I mean, you know, over in California, where the nominee, and you'll have to update me on where the nomination for this Secretary Hsu is in the process. But out in California, they were doing this thing where they're cracking down on independent contractors, right? And you're not going to get away with being an independent contractor, small business, usually almost always solo practitioner. That's the definition of it. And they're saying, no, you got to be unionized, got to go by these rules, you got to pay these dues, you got to be part of this system. I mean, that's the stuff that really grinds this economy to a halt.
Absolutely. And really, that's one of the major issues right now in the debate over Julie Hsu's nomination. They had a hearing, I think it was last week, Ed. There's going to be a vote tomorrow in the Senate Labor Committee that's run by Bernie Sanders on whether or not she will advance to the floor of the Senate. It's pretty clear, I think, she'll get out of committee and she will end up on the floor. When they have the vote on the floor is yet to be determined, because I think they're going to have to really work a lot harder for the votes to get her passed as Secretary of Labor than they did to get her to be the Deputy Secretary of Labor. She had 47 votes cast against her on that vote. But Ed, you're on top of the news, even though you don't know it. You're absolutely right. In California, the Assembly Bill 5, as it was known and is now the law out there, basically said that if you were a photographer, if you were a writer, if you were, you know, a translator, someone who had an independent job and you were kind of hired for one-off jobs and you did this stuff, you're even a musician or even an owner-operator truck driver, that somehow that status was not appropriate and you had to be an employee. And Ed, your instincts, your spider instincts are great because independent contractors can't be unionized, but guess what? Employees can. And so AB 5 made a change in the definition of who could be an independent contractor and what that was. And basically the drive was to convert these people into employees, and how it manifested itself in the ports, for example, at Long Beach and Los Angeles, those two big ports out there on the West Coast.
Right.
Basically, if you were an independent operator running trucks off the port, you had to be an employee in order to pick up loads and deliver loads to the port after AB 5 got in. And the protest came from the truck drivers themselves against this, because a lot of these guys, as you probably mentioned and knew, you know, they bought their first truck. They may have a second truck or a third truck, and there's their family members that are driving them, and they're a small business, but yet now they have to be employees. And so I think it was something like 70,000 independent owner operator truck drivers left California and stopped doing business there because of what Julie Hsu was the architect of when she was the Secretary of Labor out there in California.
We're talking again with Mark Mix about the state of this nomination for Secretary of Labor. Mark, more broadly, pulling back up for sort of above one appointment. I know one appointment can be, you know, massively influential, but how do you see the economy right now? I mean, we got a lot of headwinds, right? With inflation, we've got changes in the information, economy. How are you feeling about the economy? What are your members seeing and feeling?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. And I got a note from one of our friends in a particular state just yesterday. And he was saying, you know, we can't find anyone to work. And you'd think that if that was the problem, that things would be going relatively well. But the reason why they can't find anyone that wants to work is because the government's been taking care of people for the last, you know, 3 years, basically, or the last 2.5 at least. And that goes to the Julie Hsu nomination as well. One of the other issues dealing with this nomination is the fraud and the misrepresentation that went on out in California while she was in charge. Something like $30 to $40 billion in fraud, where money was going to murderers and Russian cartels and just absolute, you know, pranksters and thieves and fraudsters in California. And, you know, she's coming back here to basically run a, or it's been nominated to run an organization that's the mothership of all that stuff. And so I think, you know, the economy has this, there's this drag that we're beginning to feel, and I'm beginning to see it here at Right to Work. Our folks are very generous, but we're the disposable part of disposable income. And so the way we see it, things are slowing down a little bit. And I think it probably is going to get a little bit worse. And, you know, Joe Biden would have us believe that his energy policy has nothing to do with high energy prices, that unbelievable government spending has nothing to do with inflation, and that their border policies have nothing to do with crime and fentanyl. So I don't know what to believe, but, you know, you kind of see it with your own eyes, Ed.
Mark Mix, our guest again. Mark, you mentioned something there at the end. How do we even process the problem of the border in terms of the impact on labor? I mean, I know you and your long career, you know, and you've been somebody, part of the sort of mindset of your work is, hey, let people figure out how to work for what they're working for. Don't make them pay dues when they don't want to be a part of it. Don't make them be mandatorily in unions if they don't want. If they want to, fine, you know, but kind of make America is you figure it out, and you figure entrepreneurial stuff, sometimes big business. We got millions and millions and millions of workers coming into our system, and we're not, it's not even that we're regulating. I don't want to sound like I'm calling for regulation. We just don't even know up from down in the economy. How do we handle that?
You know, it's interesting, Ed, you mentioned that, because if you go back into history, back in time, back to maybe the 1980s, even 1970s, and certainly at that point, it was organized labor that was one of the biggest, you know, opponents of kind of this immigration process. And frankly, because they were trying to protect the jobs of rank and file union members across the country. Now, interestingly enough, union officials are one of the some of the leading proponents of the so-called open borders policy that we're seeing. And I think that's a reflection of the change in the workplace from, you know, manufacturing jobs that were exported after Bill Clinton, who was a union favorite, started, you know, sending manufacturing companies overseas. But now the unions are trying to organize kind of the lowest level of the service economy and other industries that, you know, will provide dues revenue. But in order to do that, they have no problem with a border that seems to be wide open. I know rank and file union members do, absolutely, but union officials don't. And those are the folks that are backing Joe Biden and this crazy policy that really, as you mentioned, Ed, is causing real trouble and is will cause more trouble for the American workforce.
Well, and as you know, Mark, I mean, the thing is that one of the worst parts about this is that everybody says play by the rules and you get ahead. And then you look up and you say, wait, they're ignoring the rules. I mean, they're enforcing this set of rules and that set of rules and demanding this set of new rules. And as to the basics of the law, forget about whether we don't have to get into anything dramatic like January 6th or anything. Just go to the basics of a border and then they'll demand of businesses that you be penalized for employing workers who are not e-verified when the system can't even manage the border itself. It's worse than confusing, but it looks like, as we've seen with this nomination of Joe Biden, Julie Hsu, to be Secretary of Labor, that's what they want. This isn't a miscalculation or a malfunction. It's a feature of their people. It's a feature of their policies. So, Mark Mix, let me say thank you. I've got to run. It's National Right to Work Committee, almost 3 million members of that public policy organization. He's also the president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. If you go to nrtw.org, there's a lot of there. NRTW, that stands for National Right to Work, nrtw.org. Thank you, Mark, for your time.
Thanks, Ed. Appreciate it.
All right. Mark Mix, everybody. I'll put up a couple of links to the stories about this nomination. Couldn't be worse. Actually, it really couldn't be worse. At least when Biden was picking his friends, like the former mayor of Boston, it sort of directionally, the guy wanted the economy to work and things to happen. When it comes to this California bureaucrat who is now about to ascend to be Secretary of Labor and probably will get through, it couldn't be worse. So, all right, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on a Pro America Report. We'll be back in a moment.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. Mrs. Schlafly was a courageous and articulate voice for traditional values and common sense for more than 70 years. Now, continuing that legacy, here's the president of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, Ed Martin.
President Joe Biden is pledging our country to support a perpetual war in Ukraine as his way of appeasing globalists who control the presidential nomination process. As Phyllis Schlafly wrote in her 1964 classic, A Choice Not an Echo, quote, "The strategy of politics like an iceberg is 8/9 under the surface," end quote. Phyllis's wisdom can be seen on display as Biden sent his Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen to Kiev, Ukraine, merely a week after Biden himself visited there. Our Treasury Secretary should not be flying into a foreign war to pledge unlimited funding of the war at American taxpayer expense. But that's exactly what globalists want. South American countries, led by Brazil, were quick to attempt to broker peace in Ukraine. For this, globalists persuaded Germany to retaliate against Brazil by blocking shipments of Brazilian goods unrelated to the war. At the same time, Biden oddly delayed visiting the toxic train wreck in Ohio and dispatched a leading rival, Pete Buttigieg, to visit it instead. This posturing by Biden makes little sense if he's trying to defeat Trump, who did visit Ohio. But Biden may view Buttigieg as his more immediate hurdle for the nomination. Buttigieg was groomed, after all, by the Foreign Rhodes Scholar Program, just as Bill Clinton was. And many globalists view Buttigieg as their first choice, just like they did with Bill Clinton. Joe Biden has not spoken at the globalist confab in Davos since January 2017. In contrast, globalists prominently promote their favorite Buttigieg on their website, touting him as one of the most visible political figures from the millennial generation and even a winner of the JFK Library Foundation New Frontier Award. These subsurface rumblings clearly indicate trouble on the horizon for the Biden administration, but all will be brought to light in 2024. However, now is the time for conservatives to be preparing for what President Trump wisely called the fight of our lives during his CPAC speech. In the battle to preserve our culture, the globalists will most certainly be our biggest adversary.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. As leader of the free world, America has a responsibility to stay strong in economics, industry, morality, and military capability. Never hesitating to say America first. At PhyllisSchlafly.com, you'll see why the best foreign policy begins with a strong America. Join the conversation at PhyllisSchlafly.com. Thanks for listening, and join us again for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Quickie. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Thank you for tuning in today. Mostly got less than a minute, so I just want to say thank you to the great Noah Dingley, our producer. Thank you to Ryan Hyde, our assistant producer. I don't forget his title, but he's great. And listen, if you have any guests or books or things you want me to check in on, send them to me, ed@phyllisschlafly.com. Direct messages, DMs are open on Twitter at Eagle Ed Martin, Facebook Ed Martin Live, and go through phyllisschlafly.com to go right through the website. We will be back tomorrow, of course. Got a lot more tomorrow. We'll catch up with John Schlafly and the Schlafly Report. It'll be good to hear from him. And don't forget that Roger Stone interview. If you could do me a favor, pass it on to other people. That was fun to do. Should be newsworthy. People are paying attention to Roger Stone. We will take anything you can do, tweets, reposts, anything you want to promote those things. So we'll be back tomorrow. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Talk to you then.
America Report on The Answer San Diego.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.